For the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, this is a review of John Suchet's The Last Waltz. Each episode is enriched by beautiful music selected by Gerald Fennec. The script is mine, Patricia Salomone. It is the 22nd of May, 1899. Strauss II is conducting the overture of the Fledermaus at the Vienna Court Opera House. He conducts with gusto, with passion, as though he knows it is the last time he performs to the public. For some time he has given up conducting while swinging to the tune of his violin. Mostly, arthritis has impeded that. And conducting is a strain which causes him to perspire profusely. He has complained that after conducting, he is bathed in sweat. Suchet writes, "I imagine the eyes blazing, sweat already breaking out on his forehead in nervous anticipation. Perhaps a last run of the hand through the hair, before bringing down the baton for the rising notes that begin the orchestra swell." One wonders, we are told by the author, what goes through Strauss's mind. Does he ask himself why he has never been able to repeat the success of this, his best-loved operetta? The music is familiar to the audience, which hums along smiling at the familiarity. Strauss's music always brought joy to his listeners. It still does. But the man, Johann, is tired. At the end of the overture, he hands over the baton, leaving the podium bathed in sweat. The audience adores him. It is quite possible that people rise to their feet in enthusiastic applause. They want to keep him there in their midst till the end of the performance. But he calls for a fiacre to take him home to Adele. To the disappointment of his fans, he leaves the Vienna Court Opera House and emerges, Suchet tells us, into the light of a spring afternoon. The air tasted good, permeated with the scent of lilac and acacia. Horse chestnut trees in full white blossom lined the streets. But there still is a hint of late winter chill. Strauss decides to let go of the fiacre and to walk all the way home to the Egelgasse. ¶¶ By the time he finally reaches his home, he is pale and breathless. Adele orders him to bed to rest. But he is restless. He has to work on his Cinderella and is up standing at his desk, refusing to acknowledge his illness. The family doctor, Dr. Lederer, suggests that they call in a specialist, Professor Dr. Hermann Nothnagel of the University of Vienna, whose diagnosis is that of double pneumonia. The patient loses consciousness and becomes delirious. On June 3, 1899, Professor Nothnagel issues a bulletin announcing that the patient is unconscious. Johann reaches out for his wife's hand and kisses it, passing away in the early afternoon. Johann Strauss the Younger, the best-loved composer the city of Vienna had ever produced, died at the age of 73, 6 months short of a new year and of a new century. Same afternoon, in the Volksgarten, the well-known composer and conductor Eduard Kremser was conducting a concert in the memory of Johann Strauss I and his colleague Josef Lanner. Someone went up to the podium, tapped the maestro on his shoulder, and whispered in his ear. Word went round to all the components of the orchestra, and Kremser stretched out his arm, palm down, indicating pianissimo. Thus, to the sweet melody of By the Beautiful Blue Danube, Vienna came to know of the death of its beloved composer, Johann Strauss the Younger.
Eduard Kremser was born on the 10th of April, 1838, in Vienna, and died on November 26, 1914, in the same city. He was an Austrian composer, arranger and conductor, and he acquired great importance as a collector of traditional Viennese songs. In Vienna, Eduard Kremse worked from 1869 to 1899 as choir master of the Wiener Mangerwesengein, which later appointed him honorary champion. The Dresdner Mangerwesengein also appointed him an honorary member. Kremse gained fame through his effective treatment of six old Dutch folk songs, including the old Dutch Thanksgiving, We Come to the Prayer of Adrienne Valerie. He also created several major male choral works with orchestral accompaniment: the old Christmas Carol, Balkan paintings, Prinz Eugen, Das Leben ein Tanz, and others. He also composed various songs for mixed choir, operettas, songs and piano pieces. The city of Vienna commissioned him to compile and publish an anthology of Viennese music to preserve this traditional cultural asset. Together with Ludwig Gruber, Kremse contributed in the sequence a wealth of compositions from various periods, in addition to vocal music and instrumental music. There was also several handwritten surviving pieces that were found after his death. The citizens of Vienna were also called upon to send him material for this project. Thus, between 1911 and 1925, three volumes of Viennese songs and dances, called Kremser albums for short, were created. Together they are among the most important Viennese song collections. At the end of the 1970s, the opera and concert singer Eberhard Krummer discovered and edited numerous works from this collection and presented them in concerts and recordings. Since then, the songs in these albums have been picked up and edited by several other artists. In addition, Kremse has become socially and politically committed. He was also vice president and first honorary member of the Society of Authors, Composers and Music Publishers from 1910, honorary member of Traditional Society of Music Lovers in Vienna, and was elected on June 14, 1913, as president of the newly founded Austrian Composers Union. He was also vice president with court music director Karl Michael Zierer. Kremse held these positions until his death on November 26, 1914. His tomb at the Vienna Central Cemetery has been declared an honorary grave by the city of Vienna.
The Last Waltz by John Suchet shows the invitation to attend the ceremony of the funeral that was sent out by Adele, wherein she describes her husband as the best and most noble of men, the tenderest of husbands, and a friend beyond worth. The funeral took place on June 6th. The hearse bearing the coffin was drawn by 8 black horses and departed the Eagle Gasse in the afternoon. 6 pallbearers from the Society of Music and the Vienna Authors and Journalists Association bore red satin cushions on which lay Johann Strauss's baton, a lyre, Strauss's medals, and his violin with its strings sprung, signifying that it would never be played again. The funeral cortege slowly left the house in Eagelgasse. Carriages overflowing with flowers and wreaths carried mourners headed by Adele and close friends. Conservatory professors, artists, more than 40 representatives of parliament and the city council, Vienna's mayor, Karl Luger, and Gustav Mahler. Solemnly and sadly, the cortege made its way past the Theater an der Wein to the Protestant church in the Dorotheegasse, where the religious ceremony was held. Thence, past the Vienna Court Oper building and the Musikwehren Concert Hall, to then take on the lengthy journey to the city's main cemetery in the Zentralfriedhof. Here, Johann Strauss the Younger was laid to rest in the musician's quarter, alongside his friend Johannes Brahms, and close to Beethoven and to Schubert. His death in the last year of the 19th century brought an era to an end, both historically and musically. In those days when the social media did not exist, the press published one eulogy after the other. The Fremdenblatt declared, "The name of Johann Strauss was like our flag. We bury more than a composer. A proud piece of our fatherland is laid to rest." It is hard to believe that less than half a century later, the Nazi establishment could even have dreamt of cancelling this great man from the minds and the hearts of his compatriots. Oh, and they did try, but unsuccessfully. The character of Johann Strauss became identified with his music, a perfect example of the character of the composer being subsumed in his music, music that makes you happy. Yet, as John Suchet has shown in his book, and I have underlined in this series of A Book, A Thousand Stories, Johann Strauss was not the carefree soul that his music would suggest. He had a difficult family life. Since childhood, he had a stormy relationship with his father, Johann Strauss the Elder, who preferred his second family and contrasted his son's passion for music. He was supported in his intent by his mother Anna, but she was indeed overpowering. He went on to have a difficult relationship with his two brothers, Joseph and Edward, who could not resist being envious of his success. He married late, lost his first wife, and had a hard time with his second frivolous wife, only to find peace in marriage with his third wife, Adele. He had an unnatural fear of illness and death, which made traveling very hard, as he feared accidents. He found it difficult to miss in society and was happiest far from the chic, artificial theatre society, having consequently few friends. Yet, he left us music that brings a smile on every listener's face. Tells us that there was one notable absentee from Johann Strauss's funeral, his younger brother Edward, now 64, and a man with problems, who would soon commit the single worst act of vandalism in the history of music. My listeners will remember that I chose to begin this series recounting this act of vandalism, this tragedy to the world of music. I refer to Edward's destruction of tons of manuscripts containing music scores. For more than 2 days, Edward sat before the kilns of porcelain factories in Vienna, watching his family's labor go up in smoke. I repeat here what John Socher writes, who knows what great compositions, as well as valuable material relating to this most prodigious of musical families, might have been lost in those few dire days of 1907. He also tries in this chapter, chapter 20, entitled Edward's Flames of Revenge, to delve into the why and the wherefore of such a cruel act. The younger of the three Strauss brothers was looking to a diplomatic career, but events and his mother's intervention decreed otherwise. Such was the success overseas of elder brother Johann that when Joseph died, it was indeed necessary that the third and younger brother take up the baton and help conduct and run the Johann Strauss Orchestra. Like his brothers, Eduard had musical talent. He had been encouraged to specialize in the harp. His debut as a conductor took place in 1862, when he was 27 years old. Handsome and always impeccably turned out, he was known as Der Schöne Edi. But alas, because of his temperamental character, Edi was not liked by the members of the orchestra. Although he knew that so as to go down to posterity he needed to compose, and his compositions ran into the hundreds, he found it difficult to have his compositions published. He therefore mostly conducted his brother's orchestra, and although immensely successful in this, he inevitably was compared to his two elder brothers, which caused a brooding envy in him. He even complained that his brother Johann took no interest in the upbringing of his two sons, Johann and Joseph. In 1890, he worked terribly hard touring the United States and Canada, performing in 62 cities. Over the following 9 years, he toured Germany, Russia, the Netherlands and England, as well as performing in Vienna. This made him a wealthy man, until he realized that his wife and his two sons squandered all his money. This led to separation from his wife and to the distancing from his two sons. At all, Eduard had hoped in some help from his brother Johann. This did not come during the greater Strauss's life, nor was he left any part of the composer's inheritance. Eduard was compelled, therefore, to face another grueling tour of the States, where over the turn of the century he gave concerts in 109 concert halls all over that vast country. Tired and stressed, on 13 February 1901, Eduard disbanded the Johann Strauss Orchestra after having conducted it for 30 years. He disliked his work and had no affection for the men in his orchestra. He wrote, "I was overjoyed to have nothing more to do with this category of men." On returning to Vienna, He was to be disappointed in finding out that his son, Johann, who had taken after the family career in conducting his own orchestra, was arrested and imprisoned for bankruptcy. Unimaginable shame had been brought to the family. So, was it envy for his brother's success? Was it disappointment at his brother Johann's treatment of him and of his sons? Or was it perhaps the shame of his son's behavior? Or was it for some other reason that Edward loaded several carts of music scores and documents and had them incinerated in 1907? We shall look at what possible reasons our author gives in The Last Waltz next week. Until then, I thank my collaborators and I thank you, my listeners.